This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, March 19th, 2008.
Sure.
Looks like him.
Okay.
You're on.
Okay, at this time, I'd like to call Wednesday, March 19th, 2008 meeting to order. I'd like to ask if there's any late additions to our agenda. Okay. With no late additions to our agenda, we'll move on to the business of the day. Our guests, President Davis Corbin and Vice President Mary Hoppelman. President Corbin, we have some questions for you. There's three of them, and there's three EA members that are going to be asking this.
Okay.
Kind of dealing for some information. The first one is, it came out of our winter retreat that we had back in January about the current makeup of the employee assembly model, its effectiveness, its ability to represent the entire university, and that brought a lot of discussion that maybe our makeup isn't the right structure. Maybe we need to bring in other areas, create a different model that actually can represent more of the university, provide us easy feedback from other units that aren't well represented. Knowing that you come from another university, you may have experience with other employee assemblies and their models. If you have any suggestions, we did meet with Mary a couple weeks ago, and we brought up the same discussion. Some of the ideas came out for maybe forming an outer ring communication vehicle to start off with, pulling with that school, pulling different areas to kind of committee to try to get their input, provide feedback to their constituents. So with that, just want to see if you've seen some work models or you have any ideas.
Sure. First of all, it's great that you are doing it at all and that you're looking at the structure internally and rethinking it all the time. I think it's fantastic. I am used to the two other places that I've been involved with this at UCLA a very long time ago and at Iowa more recently. Staff governance group is a larger group. But there was an executive committee sort of structure, maybe this size, that we could interact with. But this idea, if I understand it correctly, that you and Mary discussed of having sub-portions of the overall institution have their own representation and feeding that information to a core group, I think is a really good idea. Ultimately, though, this is sort of a non-answer, but ultimately, I think it's important that you do the structure the way that you think it's the most effective, as opposed to saying, well, or even Opperman thinks it should change this way or that way. If it's really a shared governance group that the employees should figure out, just like the faculty and the students should. It's interesting when you're thinking about the structure this year because, you know, the student assembly, as you know, is making some monumental changes or at least discussing direct election of people from the student body at large and also some other changes. So I think it's good to review it. I can tell you three or four principles that I think are good to share governance groups in general. And I would defer to you all to figure out how to turn those principles into actions that would be implementable that you think would serve the staff better. One is that no part of the institution is not represented, that every part is represented somehow. One thing that I'm thinking a little bit about, in fact, Mary and I were talking about it today for other reasons unrelated to this meeting, is cross-talk with the medical school staff. And in the shared governance meetings that I have with the students, I now have PhD and MD students from Weill with us at those meetings by phone. So when I meet with the SA and GCSA here, we have them on the phone with us. And when I have office hours with the students, we have PhD and MD students have access to the same office hours. On the faculty, I go separately to a shared governance group. I've only done one so far. They have two shared governance groups for faculty. And one is what you would see as a real shared governance group where people are elected representatives and there's no bureaucrats there, there's no department head. And so I'm not able to bring them together in one body. But I'm not aware of whether there are staff representation groups at Weill So that would make it harder, but still I think it's important to think about it. I don't even know who to suggest that you talk to about close to everything.
I talked to, they have a new HR person, uh-huh. So I just mentioned to her that your family would be interested in finding a partner there, and she's still, you know, trying to staff them, but put it on her list. And
so if that day comes that there is someone who is functioning in some shared capacity, shared governance capacity as well, I would urge you to think about having that person join your group remotely, even if it's just information sharing, not a voting person. And also, on the occasions that you guys are kind enough to invite me and Mary here, to have them on the phone or think about doing that, because I think there's commonalities. I know for Geneva, we have that great connection, and you actually come. And so anyway, that's something that I was thinking about. So that first principle is anyway that all parts of the institution should be represented. The second is that there'll be a well-defined set of rules determining how long they serve in a shared governance capacity, and if there's a chance to re-up or not, and that people in general are aware of it, so that you can meet two competing needs. One is for people who are really devoted to it, are able to put the time into it, and learn issues and want to supply continuity that people can stay for as long a time as everybody is comfortable with. But on the other hand, that there's a chance to roll it over so that people can feel that there's some churn, some positive churn, so that a lot of other people get their voices into it. And the smaller the group, the larger an issue that it gets to be, potentially. So anyway, that's the second principle. A third principle is that no bureaucrat, that I don't set your agenda, that you set your agenda. And you guys do that already, obviously. And then the fourth principle is that there is some interaction between the shared governance groups of faculty, staff, and students. And Cornell has the University Assembly and some other ad hoc ways in which that happens. We have not, I haven't done a good job yet of going to a lot of UN meetings. But that possibility of talking about broad diversity issues with the people in executive sort of positions within the shared governance organization, blah, 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 I think it's the thing I want to do more. And hope that you guys will have time to participate in that and what I really need to do it. Once again, because of being able to reach out to the faculty and the students, both PhD and MD students at Wild, I think it's possible now that I could put a group like that together, even if there's an ad hoc meeting once a year. But the group that would not be represented would be staff at Wild. And also, even though they don't work for us, the staff at the hospital is such a closely accredited institution, there are probably some issues where it might make sense, even though it doesn't have to do with rules and regulations that we deal with, because it's an affiliate, not a wholly managed organization. There are probably some things that are important to both staff, faculty, and students' experiences based on the interactions in the hospital and medical school. And I'm just intending to start conversations with the CEO of the hospital about that issue, see what the comfort level is. So those are the principles that I would think about.
Great. We appreciate your input. In the beginning of the year, the EA established a whole bunch of goals at our summer retreat. One of the top ones was identify who we represent and find a way to represent them.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So that's why this possible look at our current model plays a part in helping us achieve that goal.
Yeah, I think it's great that you're doing this. It's great that you're doing this. So chaos.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's going to be a long-term process to move forward with it. Nothing that can happen overnight.
Well, one of the good things is it takes care of that pesky free time even when I'm
Well, but it also gets rid of it if it comes together properly, because
sure.
Now the collection of information to pass on up can easily be obtained because we have a representative or at least a voice from every area.
That's a good point.
And the open forum now serves a different purpose than gathering information because we have our information. I'm going to open the floor for a few questions on this topic, if you don't mind.
Just
anybody have any questions? Just clarify, and I know we're going to set how we want to set the organization up, separate, but the two organizations they work with, have they got a clear picture? Were they larger organizations or larger groups that you're dealing with?
Larger groups that I dealt with, and with the point that I gather right that Mary made to you when we talked, they have specific subgroups represented by proxy and then groups. So, the UCLA one, you probably have to discount because it was a very long time ago, 27 years ago, but the Iowa one is more recent.
Okay. Any other questions on that topic?
With all the groups you've had experience with, which one worked best for you to be able to get information about what kind of staff and efficiency and whatnot, smaller groups like this or larger councils, or how would it work best for you personally?
You know, I'm very adaptable to work on the one work, but the direct answer to your, the two things that I always count on is that there'll be a group, a leadership group like this, that will assist it and distill and thought about the issues. That there'll be someone in Mary's counterpart position who gets up every day and thinks about what's good for the staff and how to make the staff experience better. And that's a very important and separable issue from self representation. And then thirdly, that there are opportunities for me to interact with like five people in addition to interacting with you and with Mary, because it's a little different voice to talk to rank and file people, and you've given me a chance to do that. So in all the ways that I like to do it, you're doing a great job. The question is, do you think you're doing the right thing for the people that are standing behind you? And that says it's invested in time. But the three ways that matter, and you're doing great. Mary's, found the information about this stuff, and she does get up every day and think about what's good for the staff. The only thing I don't know is to what extent my interactions with the rank and file is adequate or not adequate at the moment.
Okay.
Anything else? We definitely appreciate your input. Okay. Bill Liddick is going to ask our next.
Sure. Moving on to the second question. It pertains to the recently announced university plan to reduce the tuition loans for students coming in from middle-income homes. Certainly a great initiative. We were wondering if you maybe just, David, if you could help us a little bit, if you could provide more information about the program. And specifically, we were wondering how the program is going to be financially supported by the university.
The program follows programs that were created by a bunch of other schools, not a big bunch, a small bunch of other schools. The idea being twofold, the goal, objective being twofold. One is to allow people to include the aspiration of an expensive higher education, to not exclude it because of the possibility of indebtedness. And then secondly, to put the financial assistance most squarely lined up with the people who need it the most. And just if I can digress just for a minute, if you look at the ways to finance college education from a parent's or a student's point of view, for a small amount of the population, the students are and families are facing this level of money. So to put it more clearly, the vast majority of higher education in the country is not in places like Cornell, which is state schools and community colleges that charge next to nothing compared to what private schools. Even out-of-state tuition is, although much, much more expensive than in-state tuition, is usually somewhat less than private school tuition. So one thing to understand is that the national issue of affordability of higher education will not be solved by the kind of things that schools like Cornell do, although it's a symbolic rhetorical thing. It really helps our students. But it's a tiny drop in the big ocean of higher education. There's 4,000 institutions of higher education in the country. And there's 62 AAU schools, to just give you a taste of what we're talking about. But whatever kind of school you're at, whether it's community college or whether it's Cornell, there are people who can't afford it no matter what the cost is. And the country supports these things called Pell Grants, which you have to be at the federal poverty level or less to get. And they pay $4,500 or so a year. So if you go to a community college or an in-state state school, state school, or some four-year college state that has, like the THP program in New York State has, that has even more robust ones, it can help pay some substantial portion. If you're paying tuition at 36 or 30 or 40,000, that 4,500, you know, doesn't go that far. So, but at least that's in existence. Then there are these loan programs, especially the Perkins loan program, which a lot of generations and generations of people, I went through on a precursor of the Perkins loan program, and the last three budgets under the current administration is just zeroing out that program, not having a Perkins loan program. And the reason I burden you with that piece of information is that those who make too much money to get a Pell Grant or go to a school with a Pell Grant who can cover it, don't have capacity to acquire debt. Either actually don't have it, so people wouldn't loan them the money, or don't have the ability to retire the debt. If we don't have something like Perkins loan program, then there's going to be a lot of people who will not go to college, and there are going to be people who self-selected because they don't have money, just the exact opposite of what we should be doing. So the most important thing that all of us need to do, much more important than these kind of programs, especially like Cornell, is to make sure that the federal government doesn't turn its back on relatively low-interest student loans, because a lot of people are going to have to borrow money, a little bit, medium amounts or a lot. So I just wanted to tell you that, because that's a big underlying issue. Forgetting about that for a minute, saying where the student is applying to Cornell, the average student has been graduating into debt of about $23,500 average. Then some are graduating with $3,000, $5,000, $8,000, and some are graduating with $50,000 or $60,000. In terms of need-based loans, now families may decide based on their debt capacity to borrow like crazy, depending on the rate of interest, because they think it's a better use or a better way of money management. I'm not talking about that stuff, I'm talking about need-based loans from the university. And so the idea was of our program to find a way that families who are poorest in the country would not have to consider debt as one of those factors in their decision whether to apply or accept admission to a place like Cornell. And Carolyn England and David Harris and Biddy and Doris Davis and others worked on a way to do it that would make sense and that we could afford. The big problem here is the size of the need population is big compared to the other schools that we consider competitors. And so our need-based population is larger than the whole student body at Yale and approaching the size of student body at Harvard. And so a lot of people with their community. So what they came up with, which I think is a really good place to start, is the median family income right now is about $58,000, the median family income. Everybody in the family working, putting money together. And the idea is that this year, the year we're right now, the kids that will come here this fall, if the family makes 60 or less, so in other words, if they're at or below the median family income in the United States, they will not have to get any debt here. We'll give them the money in grants, not a need-based loan. Next year, it'll be advanced to $75,000. And Carolyn's idea was to keep indexing it to make sure it was a little bit ahead of the median family income, so that we could say, you know, a bit more than half of the population in the United States in terms of income could go through a school right free. And then just arbitrarily up to $120,000, which gets us to the middle class, to the farther, which the indebtedness would be capped at $3,000 a year. So if a student went through 4 years, they'd have $12,000 debt, about half of what the current average debt is now. Okay, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then how to pay for it. So the endowment, which is one part of what all universities call long-term investment pool, the commonly used term, the biggest piece of that is the endowment. But when people use the word endowment in general, the generic term, they usually mean the whole long-term investment pool. Mm-hmm. That's about $6 billion at this university, 5.9. And the idea of how to handle those endowments is to draw enough money into the institution for operations to use for what the money was there for. But to make that amount less than the expected rate of return on the investment. So that whatever that difference is, say the average investment return is 10% and the average drawdown was 5%, that income could grow 5% a year. Why do that? Because of inflation. And so the endowment would have the same relationship that it needs, even as inflation occurs. So we've been drawing down between 4 and 5% here. Commonly, nonprofits will draw down around 5%. And there's been a lot of national pressure for universities with substantial long-term investment pools to draw down 5%, like it's sort of an unspoken rule for a lot of other nonprofits. And so the first thing that they dreamed up was to draw down more money for a while and use that extra money coming out of long-term investment pool to pay for these grants to the students so the families wouldn't have to acquire debt. So that's one. Secondly, just to reallocate money like you guys do on all your units and all of us do every day, just a little more vigorously toward poorer families, which I think is terrific. Mm-hmm. And then thirdly, we try to get more people to give us money for scholarships. And the campaign right now, a $4 billion goal to go for student scholarships is $225 million. And so, we're trying to bring more than that in. And if you think about how much money you have to put in the endowment to support a student going through here, including tuition, books, room and board, and everything, it's about $1 million per student. $1 million times 5% is 50,000, and that's about the cost of going through here at Cornell when you add everything up. Tuition, if you pay the full sticker price. And so I'm out talking to interested alumni everywhere and saying that trying to interest them in making a commitment to the endowment fund so that for each $1 million they can help us with, they will support forever a student, if you want to look at it that way, as a full ride scholarship, if you want to look at those terms. And so, how successful that thing will be, I don't know. The drawdown, the more vigorous drawdown on the endowment, immediately we do it because we decide to do it so that money is available. The philanthropy depends. This is a hard time right now because the markets are so volatile and people are nervous, of course, but still people have been very generous. We're at approaching $2.1 billion in campaigns in already. And people are very generous. I'm sure that, we'll get to the goal. And then how much we can reallocate, of course, depends on a lot of other factors. The reallocation in general, you don't want to set sort of pit one part of the university against another. So we have reallocations that have to do with staff needs, faculty needs, student needs, facilities, and we can help everybody. And every time you reallocate money to one area, you're in essence deciding not to put it somewhere else. And so it has to be done very, very, very carefully because of all of the high aspirations and big reach of the university, all the growth that's envisioned in different areas. So how much can be reallocated is limited, is what I'm saying. Because it really depends to me to harm some one area of the university in order to help the other, if that other area is also a high priority. So I think that most of the financial handling will have to come from the drawdown on the endowment and just making the denominator bigger by bringing more philanthropy in. But I want at the end of this long-winded answer to go back to where I started, and that is we have to push the elected officials in Congress not to mess around with these federal student loan programs. Because then for sure we're going to be hurting generations and generations of people who don't have money to go through school. And it's just not right. It's not right, first of all, because I think it's just not right, not moral. And secondly, we're throwing away the talents of half or more of the population of the country by not giving people a way to borrow money at an interest rate that they could afford to retire the debt. And so I'm spending some as much time as I can talking to people in Washington and at the Albany and trying to make sure that the public still views that as a public public responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions?
I have a question, I guess it's a comment actually. I'm telling you about my affairs and development, and I saw Carolyn Ainsley do a presentation about the ramifications of the financial aid initiative. And I'm going to address the issue of reallocation of existing funds, because one of the things that Carolyn said that I found really striking was that because deans realized the importance of it, they're giving up to 80% of their unrestricted annual support, which I think is a really important point. And I don't know if you guys know how this works, but there's the general annual fund, but then there are also college and year specific annual funds. So the deans get a pool of money every year. It means that for all different types of things, and for gap funding for the faculty, they use it for student projects. So now all a big portion of that will be going financial aid at the college level. So you know, one of the major ways that we can actually fund this is by increasing annual support, whether to the university as a whole or for people to designate, you know, I want to support the annual fund at the College of Engineering, at the College of Art.
That's a really good point. Yeah, it's a really, really important point. And I think people will resonate with this, you know, people will understand how important it is to keep the doors open regardless of socioeconomic status.
Yes,
this would apply to Cornell employees as well as anybody outside of, I mean, it's currently children of Cornell employees get 30% of tuition paid. So
yeah,
they fall in those income guidelines, would that be?
Yeah, it should be for sure. How that 30% channel, I know you have to ask Mary or Paul Bursick, how that would work, but I would assume, full attention when she comes back, and I would assume that the same guidelines will apply. But what do we like the 30%? I don't know. That's a direct grant, right? 30%. That is university paid right to the institution.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that makes sense. But ask her to make sure that I'm not getting the wrong information.
Have a high school senior, so.
Yeah.
A little bit personally.
Actually, I have a son coming here next year, so.
That's enormous amount of money in the schools. It really is. Really is. And the thing about the thing about higher education is people have done these sort of cold hard calculations, you know, how much money your income goes up. And you've probably seen this stuff, but getting a bachelor's degree increases your lifetime income by $1 million. And getting, you know, if you go up to graduate degrees, it goes up more. And so if you look at the after tax acquisition on $1 million, you know, it's multiples of what it costs to go to college. But the more expensive your school you go to, it's not so many multiples, and it depends on how many years you go. So my kid is a senior at just finishing, and it will have been about $220,000 by the time he's done. So, and that's not much different than Cornell. Hey, Mary, a question came up that I wanted to wait to get your answer. Cornell employees who take advantage of the tuition assistance program will be looked at by the same guidelines.
The CCTS program, so for their children, the scholarship program. Mm-hmm. I have that question. I have to find that out. I assume that what will happen is that they'll take the value of CCTS off of,
right.
And that's a grant,
right.
Too, and
right.
Then, but their income levels will be treated the same.
So for the non-grant portion, in terms of indebtedness, that was the question?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what we thought. Let me check that with you. Okay, those are good questions.
And quickly, we'll move on to our third.
Last time you were here, you talked about the housing project of the city and the campus, and you think that several projects are planned or could be initiated. I wonder what kind of projects may be made on those various projects.
Nothing has come to my level yet. The people who are actually doing the nitty-gritty thinking, like Mary and Steve Golding, others are talking about it, but it hasn't come up yet. So I'm sorry, I don't have a good answer for you now.
We are hoping that we'll be able to get our plans for the president this summer. That's what we said we would do in the community. So we've been working on a bunch of different ideas. We've been working with the local community, and we have a bunch of ideas around. If you remember, the president announced the initiatives to support the community, but focused towards the staff and faculty. So we've been looking at issues around housing and other issues like that. So we're hoping we'll have something in the early summer.
Okay.
Yeah, this is transportation.
Transportation,
right.
I'm sorry. We're actually farther along in the area of the transportation because the TGI study came up with some excellent recommendations for increasing bike paths and that sort of thing. So those are farther along in terms of implementation. They're fairly high cost programs, but they should help walking and bike riding. And then there's some more being done on other things that can be done.
Thanks for bringing up those.
Any questions?
I'm sorry to answer wrong. Thanks for having me here.
Yes.
I don't know. All the people who
have
any
pizza. Have a good trip, Mary.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Have a good trip.
Thank you. questions? Any comments or discussion about anything the president mentioned?
I work pretty closely with the transportation and affordable housing stuff, so if you ever really want to know where things are at any given moment, I can help in the area.
Okay. Thank you. Move on to the report from the chair. I think we all know Kelly, or we should by now. She's almost as regular as the furniture. She's here every day. I don't know if you mind introducing yourself to the group.
I'm Jessica Maiden. I'm in Montreal on Monday. And with IDA, with Hopi by International Programs, I'm under appointment on the street. I'm curious to let you know the family of the resident for the summer.
Glad to have you.
Yes. And we thank the clerk for speaking
with us today. Great. Nice to have you.
Hi, I'm John Miner from the Physics Department.
Nice to have you, John. So as I mentioned, when the president was here before he left, that we did meet with Mary. And we brought up the current employee assembly model rethink and restructuring idea. And what came out of that was, like I mentioned, outer ring, communication vehicle, possibly a committee versus voting members on the VA. Just a whole bunch of different ideas. But it was pretty positive, and then we could see that relayed through the president's opinions and suggestions about moving forward with that. I don't have anything else at this time. We'll move on. Michael Esposito cannot make it today. Report from the UA representative. Bill?
Actually, I have no report. Last meeting was canceled. So
okay.
No additional information.
Okay, we have no minutes for approval. So we'll move on to our committee report. The executive committee, we met last week. With the Office of Assembly, and I'm assuming that this is going to come up later on under new business, but there was some confusion as to Pat, Leon, and Hazel. There was some confusion as to these three people were asked to look at the process of moving forward with changing the makeup of the EA, and this confusion that I got was that they were asked to actually go ahead and move forward with finding out how to change, you know, what to do, what model to make, look into it. And is that what's coming up in new business? Whoever called the, who found out the resolution?
No.
That's something different?
No, that is the purpose of that group, the informal action resolution. That
okay.
That's what it's about.
So we'll get, we're going to get to this.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, staff award recognition. I don't believe
the group hasn't met, but the group will meet within the next 2 weeks. The latest information on the third of the George Peter Award winners that was selected in November, the individual has been out of work but is expected to be back in April or May, and Amy is working to find a date on Mary's calendar that will accommodate that reception.
Okay.
Also, Dennis, at the meeting where John mentioned that there was a colleague that he nominated, is there any status report on that yet?
No, John wasn't able to say just how long ago that was. Are you able to figure that out, John?
Not yet. No.
But you'll let us know. Okay.
Okay, communication, I believe.
We haven't met in a while. Has it been a little costly, do you remember?
No, it's been a little while.
I think we're still working on the outreach and the ongoing project.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing Terry did ask me to mention, as part of the outreach, we came up with that list of ways to communicate either through email, newsprint, the poster distribution, and she wanted to make sure it was clear that we did use everything on that list for the employee election to get out there wide. So, you know, through the university list, really through the president's address that went out, the HR manager list, pop and flash, from newsprint, you know, obviously we've seen a lot in the pop and some great articles. Thanks, Dennis. The Chronicle and also the Workplace Insert, and she talked about poster distribution with building ambassadors and I think a couple other groups. So we're, you know, through the communication group, we are trying to hit it wide and hard and make sure we're reaching all employees. So hopefully it'll work out.
Jessica.
Hi. I'd like to say that I joined the communications committee recently, so I'm going to be attending my first meeting soon.
Okay.
I think this is an area I can really, really help in.
Okay. I'm sure.
I have a lot of experience developing communications plans, so I think that, you know, I can help community members sort of figure out. There's one thing I think that's missing besides just communicating our activities, is communicating about the functions of the employee assembly, the potential functions, and establishing mechanisms of communication so that, for example, people in AAT know that you're the point person to talk to about these class issues, so that you don't spend a lot of your time with your family house, you know, fumbling.
Oh, definitely. I don't know, I know we're about to have you.
Is there anything extra we need to do with second or third shift staff?
For communicating?
Right. Or not?
Oh, we should do whatever we can to communicate with everybody.
No, I understand, but I'm saying, is there anything... you know, I know most of us work between 8 and 4:30, but is it practical or reasonable to even think outside the box to even have a meeting, some sort of meeting with second and or third shift people?
It would actually be a really good idea to, you know, if we have a forum during the day, we have a forum in the evening, a discussion during the day, a discussion night. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea. These people are active members of our community, their staff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them. It's a good idea to talk to us.
I think I saw John Fangle.
Oh, didn't
you?
That's okay. At the meeting on Monday, I suggested the possibility of using the DDD communications with dean directors and department heads to encourage new candidates to run for the EA and also just to publicize what's going on. And I don't know if anything was done, but about an hour before I came to this meeting, I got an email from my dean, mailed out to all of the employees in the College of Arts and Sciences, strongly encouraging employees in the college to consider running for the EA position and also for the trustee position. And attached to his email was David Corbin's email that was sent out a week or so ago.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you folks did something that initiated that or not.
Or maybe you did something.
I didn't know.
Or maybe Mary did.
Well,
that's a very helpful thing to do. And frankly, one of the areas that EA needs to work on are staff and employees within academic programs and departments.
Well, actually, as a result of that discussion yesterday, one of the things that came out of that was it would be nice to have a follow-up email from the dean, so we contacted the dean's offices of the 7 large academic colleges and asked them if they could send a follow-up with the president's email attached, and good to know that that's happening. I think it helps a lot that the email went from the president first, because
sure,
Solomon said the president sent this email, would you mind sending a follow-up? It's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I'm really glad to hear that that's going on. It's a little bit too late to organize the DDD mailing.
Yeah, that was just a suggestion.
But we can definitely put that on the list for next year.
What you need to see.
Yeah. One other thought along that line. I don't think this is anybody's fault, and there's no, and my next comment is not intended to suggest that there's any fault to be identified. But I can tell you, as a 20-plus year employee in an academic unit, that there's a very high barrier that needs to be overcome relative to the perception of the role and purpose of the EA from an academic employee perspective. It's real. I'm not sure how it happens, why it happens, but I can tell you, and I talk to people about this frequently, it's real. And so something needs to be done to try to attract involvement, appreciation, value, whatever, from that particular group of folks.
John, can you say specifically what that perception is? I mean, I'm assuming it's negative, but what is it?
It's just in the sense of not being something that employees, most employees in academic units, look to as a viable opportunity of participation. And it might be, some of it might be availability, frankly, and the work pressure that's involved. But I don't claim to know the reason. I just know the reality.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to people all the time, and it's a very strong perception. And if I can be helpful in helping with that, I'd be glad to do it. There are groups, there are employee groups within academic units that meet. And it would be very helpful, I think, if any of the EA representatives would be interested in appearing just to put in a plug and to answer questions.
Yeah.
It would go a very long way, I believe.
Yeah, those groups, I'm not aware of them specifically, can email us and let us know when the meetings are, what the group is, who they represent. Our meetings are open.
It's
great to have you here. If we can get more of a kind of attendance and get different faces and views, that would be great. The perception, I apologize. I know I come from an academic, I come from architecture, art, planning. And it could just be over the years, different signals and messages were sent. So you were going to say something? Or?
Well, actually, I didn't want to go off the side, but I did it. I had a question for Ari, actually. I was just curious as to what your response was from the dean's offices when you called them. Did it sound like they were all going to...
We can do that, and we will do it. But, except for the ones who were traveling, and they said, well, we'll talk with them as soon as they get back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This should happen.
Can I go back to your comment,
yeah.
Brian, which is that... I don't think the onus should be on employee groups to contact you.
I agree.
I think that the onus for employee assembly as an outreach entity should be to figure out who those people are and how you can reach them. I really don't think that they should have to.
Well, how many?
I was going to ask John if he could provide us with who those groups are. Then I think the outreach should come from us to them. Because I think that maybe that's why nothing happened.
Well, I can tell you very quickly that every college has an administrator managers group that meets pretty regularly on a monthly basis. And that's a good place to start,
mm-hmm.
because each of those people represents something within a given program or department. And they are also a good resource in terms of knowing other groups. There are many in arts and sciences, and I'm not going to make a list of them, I don't think. If you want to pursue me on that, I can do what I can do, but a good place to start is with department managers.
Yeah.
All right, from Geneva, I have the best of both worlds. I have academic unit administrative.
And I guess the thing that I would not want to do is concentrate. I mean, I agree that administrative managers pretty much have their finger on the heartbeat of the department, but I don't want to lose sight of the true researchers, the technicians, the research.
No, I'm just saying that managers are a door into those units.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm also thinking it would be nice to talk to chairs or unit leaders or faculty to help them to get the word out, to identify or to inform them. And I guess I'm trying to include faculty or the academics. That would be a great partnership for us to reach out to them and try not to make it just staff, but get those academics interested in what we do to help us to reach their staff as well. And I agree that business administrators are great, a great source.
Faculty have a center, right?
But what she means, I think, is like some of us work for faculty, and faculty might not let us have the time to participate.
Oh, to inform them.
Yeah, they might be our supervisors, or they're more influential, maybe, in one way or another.
Sure, but you have to stir up interest among the staff themselves first.
Maybe there's just not one way, you know what I mean? Maybe it's a multi-pronged approach, you know, from A to Z, try everything.
Yeah, it will be part of the communications plan.
Yeah.
And the staff will be part of it.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's also the communications committee.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as part of the communications committee, it sounds like it's how we handle it, but I'm also just thinking, and yeah, thinking about the Fed High Committee and the idea of maybe restructuring and so forth. These groups exist. We ought to think about that from the standpoint of part, you know, as we're thinking about ideas of restructuring. Maybe that these groups are the way to reach out, you know, to the EA and have some kind of representation of a person from their subgroup. You know, these might be the subgroups or something we're talking about. I'm just saying off the top of my head, so just something for the ad hoc community, I think you have to keep in mind of, you know, we're talking about restructuring possibly here, possibly subgroups. Maybe there's groups out there already and we just need to reach out to them or something of that nature, or have them somehow included within the EA structure in some way. It's just something to think about.
Yes, another communication vehicle. One of our goals has been to identify who we represent and how do we communicate effectively with them, and we have been making progress on it. You know, we haven't gotten, obviously, because you come here with some possible breakdowns in that communication channel. But yeah, we are working on that, and Kelly has just joined our communication committee, so hopefully she'll be able to help. There's a lot of people out there.
I want to also speak to Bill's point, which is that encouraging people to join committees is a really important way of leveraging skill sets. It's very, very important. So if you have a situation, which I've seen, just looking at your group, and that the same people are on the same committee, and if one person can't make the committee meeting, then meetings don't happen. Committees are where work happens. That is where the actual work happens. So if you extend your outreach, you can draw people in to do work at the committee level. They don't have to be an EA member, they don't have to do that, but you can bring in additional skill sets in whatever it might be, you know, personnel or, you know, whatever it might be. So,
they ought to help us out with that.
Well, I think bringing in, you know, if you look at all the different committees, you know, there are different aspects. You might want to think about what skill sets you might need for each committee, which actually I think would be the executive committee, and maybe Peggy and the office of the assembly can help in identifying, you know, are the committees working? And if they're not working, then what skills you might need. And then you can start to figure out who the people you might need are and where to find them.
Yeah, that's great. But we went a whole year with only a half seated members on the EA, so, you know, we were probably already hurting for members for committees and the entire DA itself, so that presents a problem in itself.
But that's why we
have the same people on the same committee.
Yeah. But I think, too, we're not looking just within the EA, we're talking about outreach and getting other folks outside the EA.
Wouldn't be on the hands of the same five people or whatever, and you have additional, you know, energy.
Right, and you'll be able to help us do that now. All right, anything else for ComCom? We'll move to finance.
Bill?
No update.
EGF?
I was contacted by an individual, shall remain nameless, that there has been a disaster that two staff people have experienced in the past 2 weeks. And so we're trying to work that through. The individuals need to go to the employee assistance program and fill out an application, and so we're trying to make that happen. So once the application is filled out and it's sent on to the committee, then the committee can quickly take care of it. So I'll keep people posted.
Great. Personnel policy?
Yeah, last meeting was canceled. We haven't had a meeting, I think, in 3 months or so. But we definitely, there's some issue on play for that committee, so.
Okay. IOP team?
I don't have anything to that.
University benefits?
I haven't been going to meetings. I was actually hoping that someone could take my spot. I haven't heard from anyone. I think I sent an email and I'll try for another one. The last meeting was either this month, past Monday, or it's going to be next Monday. I put the date in the calendar. And that was the other member on benefits commission that I'm here to report.
Okay. We'll send her another email if you're looking to move away from that. Employee education, Donna's not here. There's a new interested applicant for this committee. We got earlier. We've been the last week, so I think there was another member, another person on there. Yep.
I actually have two people, too, that I've tried to put in touch with Donna, and I'm not sure if they actually have them.
Okay. Do they just want a general question?
They want to be involved. They want to be on
the
employee.
They want to apply online. That's the process. They have to apply online.
Yeah, I guess something just to sort out as a general rule. If somebody's interested in serving on a committee, regardless of what constituency they are or what committee, they should contact our office, not the committee chair.
Good. Okay.
Because we have a process, and we know what the other processes are, so we'll get them lined up.
Yeah. Okay, that's it for committee reports. Move on to old business. Chili Chat resolution discussion.
I've been super big down, but I think about it out for a year and a half. I have the time to send out this report, but if there is anything new, I'm going to email it out anyway, so you guys will find out about it.
Okay. Has the resolution been done?
At some point, I don't remember when I left. I think I asked either. I think we asked the office to send this draft, but I don't know if that happened or not, or if I'm just talking about my spot. Did I just make that up? I thought we had something going on, but there isn't.
I thought you had a final document.
That's what I thought, too.
Did I? Okay.
Well, yeah, we did. It looked nice. I don't know what
I guess, is there anybody else that can help to get that pushed forward? Like you said, it's been a while, and it would be really nice to bring that thing to a close.
Well, I'll check to see if I lost track of something.
But if you have the document, I know it was like all printed off and everything. If you happen to find it, we'll throw it on.
If it's a final document, all the data just be voted on, then yeah, great. But I didn't realize it's just something that was being waited on.
Well, does the final document have to be put in the format of a resolution?
Okay, it's already in resolution.
Oh, it's already.
It just says suggest or first president to support this document or something like that.
No, I saw the final document, but I never saw a resolution.
That's maybe why I thought that the Office of Assembly was going to help us draft that or something. That's what had the impression. But if I'm wrong, don't say your fault.
I'd be happy to help you. I don't have a recollection of that, but...
Okay, so I'll look through my email and see what happened with it. I'd
be happy to help you now or in the very near future to draft a resolution, but I imagine that resolution would basically say, whereas which committee was communications committee produced this fabulous report, be therefore resolved that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's going to marry up.
Yeah.
I saw that already a while back.
Senior staff.
Well, she's seen the document, but I guess she just has seen a resolution.
So Peter will find out what he has and move forward with that. Welcome to Cornell Blue Volunteers. Carrie's not here. Does anybody know anything about this?
I think it's written on here, which is going to just for people to keep a watch out for that email for purposes to the times. But
okay.
We'll need volunteers for that for the next book and for now to staff the booth.
What day is that?
That'll be Tuesday.
And it's like 12 to 1 or something?
It's longer than that. It's about
11 to 2.
We're thinking 10 to 1, but it could be 11 to 2. 3 hours.
Yeah, we need 3 people pretty much.
I was going to say for the volunteers, yeah, it's like an hour each or something.
Mm-hmm.
Are they in the same location?
Which
is where?
A hotel.
Multi-purpose room?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like pretty much takes up the whole floor, the multi-purpose room and the, all the other attachments.
Oh, there. All the other great
people lying around.
I guess let's keep an eye out for Harry's email. Senior business, charter information and resolution discussion. Who let that one on?
I guess we have the resolution and it's here.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, an ad hoc committee was requested by the chair. I believe Brian Newman initiated that. And Hazel and Leon and Peggy and Amy and I got together and met.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through some portions of the charter and identified specific areas that we feel need to be addressed. And I think our goal, and we'll see it in the resolution, that basically there is some outdated information in the charter itself. We need to bring it into current. It's been several years, 15, whatever years, since it's been really looked at.
Right.
So our goal, based on the charge, is to identify those sections, summarize that information, bring it to the assembly to review. And then hopefully, ultimately, we will bring that forward to the appropriate folks.
Right.
So the resolution,
you got it?
Okay.
Yeah, the charge actually was to find the process of what would have to happen to change the employee assembly makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something different.
Oh, that's not what...
That's what I talked about in the report from the chair, how there was, or if there was some confusion. And I have the audio clip from the meeting minutes, from the meeting here, if you guys want to hear it again, or go back and listen to it. This has to happen. This, you know, the charter review is something we've been talking about for a long time. But at the meeting, we talked about what we talked about at the winter retreat, about the current EA structure and model, and looking forward on different models and restructuring it. And Peggy said, "Note the first thing we got to do is find out what the process is." So those three people, you, Leon, and Hazel, were tasked with finding out what the process was, and the Office of Assembly said they would help you do that.
Peggy was present at this meeting too.
Yeah.
Right.
Somehow we got off track.
I agree. I'm sorry.
Do you remember that?
I guess I was present at the meeting too. Pat was conferencing in, and I was very quiet, so you might not have known that I was there. But I think we sort of dispatched what the process was pretty quickly, because I mean there's an amendment section, and for most parts of the charter, it's just a simple two-thirds majority amendment process.
To change.
Yeah.
So if we changed our number of seats, it's a two-thirds amendment. I've been waiting for 2 months for, I don't understand how it happened.
Is that practices from other places?
No, I've been waiting for 2 months to find out what our process would be. If it takes an act of Congress to change anything in the charter and change our makeup, then we might not want to move forward. So I've been waiting for 2 months. I'm sitting on a document I had, which is the recap of our last discussion of the winter retreat, makeup of the current AA model. And I just wanted to see what the process was.
Well, how did we get so off track?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it could have been, I can't speak for her, but it could have been from Peggy, because from the executive committee, she seemed her and I had a little bit of, you know, misinterpretation of what the task was. This is great.
Nobody had their cookies that morning.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Brian, just so I understand, your request or your charge is to for an ad hoc committee to find out how to change the number of members on the EA.
The whole.
It's still not clear. Yeah.
I have something in my bag. I listened to the, after the confusion last week at the executive committee, I went back and listened to what was said and everything, a few times, and
maybe we should have done that too.
Either way, I think that this is good that the charter has to be reviewed, but
that's not. I should also mention about this that Hazel had actually gone ahead and done a substantial body of research about staff assemblies at other universities
right.
that have similar systems.
Right.
So this is something totally different than that, though.
I wonder if it could be that they thought that this would be encompassed, and we haven't gotten to the part of looking at the membership portion of.
Oh, membership was an example.
So,
but that could be something that changes with a change in structure and a change of makeup.
So can you just repeat exactly what it is that you, what the charge is, what you want?
Yeah, you were just going to read something.
Remember, okay, at the winter retreat, we were all on board. Everyone that was there was on board about, I think it's worthwhile that we move forward with looking into how we could change, restructure our model to better represent our colleagues. Everywhere. And the thing, our guest brought up a point that people aren't being reached, and it's been one of our top priorities and goals for the year. And I explained that because Peggy wasn't at the retreat, and I kind of gave a recap. And Peggy said the first step was to define what process would have to happen for this to move forward. And I took a step back and said, okay, is there anybody willing to find out what the process is? Can we just change our makeup overnight, or do we need amendments, resolutions, an act of Congress, whatever? And that's what I thought you guys were finding out.
Okay, well, I think there was a little confusion, and the group jumped right into going systematically through the charter, basically doing exactly what this charge proposes.
Right.
So basically what this resolution was is we took what the committee had started to do and put it into a resolution because one of the first things that we came about in the charter was a clause dealing with how to form an ad hoc committee and what should be specified about it.
and I can't move forward.
I wasn't even thinking that these three volunteers, because I asked for volunteers.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was considered a committee because a lot of people view this meeting with tasks.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go find out this information, come back and report. So we didn't think of this was a committee. So, we didn't have to define what the purpose is, when it's over, when are they going to come back and report. It was just, hey, we need some volunteers to find out this information. So
where are we now, and what should we do? What do you recommend that we should do at this point?
I think this is great. I think everyone probably will agree. I can't speak for them, but we do need to review our charter, and it is very old and outdated, and there's a lot of words in there. The EGF, that committee, we're battling with the interpretation of the wording as is now and for our day and age. So I don't see why we can't move forward on this. If that's, you guys are already doing it in your meetings, that's great.
So what do you want? Is the cart before the horse?
I want for the makeup of the current EA model to review that and possibly find out how we can change that. I know that idea started with me. There were some other people that were interested in being involved in that, and we were waiting on finding out the process to actually give respect to Peggy, who said we need to do this first.
I do know that Hazel has done a fair amount of her research has been about those questions.
And how does that tie into this?
Because the charter specifies how the EA membership is composed, so one of the review questions would be if there's going to be a reapportionment of how members are appointed or what the process is, that would be a charter change. So does that answer your question? Or
can I make one comment?
Yeah.
Are you asking, Brian, for a step-by-step approach to what the process is? This has to happen first.
then there has to be an amendment, or the employees, but there must be a 50% vote of the employees. Is that what you're looking for?
Pretty much, because that was my understanding of the right.
Okay.
What?
So the process.
We have to start the process of changing.
Not the charter changes themselves, but the process.
Right, because this ad hoc committee here, which I think is a wonderful idea, and I have no problem with it, and it needs to be done. Seems like you guys are energized about it. But are you looking at the entire charter? Because the EGS committee is already looking at its part of the charter. You don't have to waste your time with that.
I'm sorry, the EGS committee is...
Emergency grant.
Yeah, but it's looking at its charter?
It's looking at the criteria upon which it makes grants.
The wording. And
some of the wording, for example, the word employee is used. And I think what the original framers of it...
Is part of the employee assembly charter, though?
Yes.
The guidelines for funding are part of the charter?
They're open to interpretation. For example, the word employee, the framers, I think, intended staff, but employees cover faculty as well.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize that the employee... I mean, I knew that the committee was defined in the employee assembly charter, but I didn't know that the funding guidelines were spelled out in the charter.
Yes, it's section 7.6. That's where the wording is that this committee has been, you know, relooking at. So I just, you know, if there's other committees doing that themselves, I just, you know, maybe this resolution, you know,
might preempt that.
Well, you don't want double work.
But wait a minute. If committees, we'll go ahead.
I just read Article 7.6, Emergency Grant Fund Committee. This by no means is a definitive answer on how applications are considered. It's a charge that there are specific requirements to enable you to do the work. But there is, if you're just looking at a protocol or a process or procedure, how to identify those in need and make that determination, that's not in this charge.
But the word employee is.
That's fine. We're not asking to change the charter. You're just asking to have a further identification of what that word means.
But then you've got to be changed for future committee members.
I agree, but that's a small piece of this entire charter. The word employee as compared to reviewing the entire charter.
But I guess that
I'm really struggling here because I wasn't at the last meeting and I sense that we got some real things going on here that I don't know about. And my concern is if you ask us to do something and we didn't do it, we need to know about that first. And I don't want you to be upset with this group because we went in the wrong direction.
But in the same token,
I think it's important that clear understanding and expectations of what our responsibilities are here should be given so that we can meet those expectations. We went to a lot of trouble and we spent a lot of time on a process that I felt we were charged to do. Now, if we weren't, that upsets me because now I'm not understanding why we went in that direction to begin with. So I think we all need to take a step back and let's get a real grasp on what the goal is here and how we approach it.
All right. I mean, I would suggest listening to what was said. To me, it's clear, but maybe to somebody else, it's not, and that should be the problem.
Well, obviously, for the three of us who participated in
it. It seemed like you were getting to a specific change you might want in the proposal here, or...
Point of order, can we extend the meeting for 5 minutes?
Yeah, there's nothing in here for 2.
Thank you.
So what are you asking?
I'm sorry,
is there a way that... Because what I heard you saying was that having a whole charter review seems like a good idea, and this more or less seemed like a good way to move forward on that, except you were concerned about it conflicting with some other reviews that have more limited scope that are going on right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, my idea was after the winter retreat, and after we had a meeting, and everyone was up to date with it, and I brought up the idea at the meeting, and everyone was nodding their head in agreement, because everybody was on board, and Peggy brought up this, we got to define the process. Everything was placed on hold. We had a lot of energy, a lot of motivation, everything was placed on hold. And I was waiting
for these three people to come back and give what the process is so we can move forward on it. Then I was going to select an ad hoc committee to work on what it seems like Hazel's already been researching to move forward. There are a lot of other people interested, not just these three people. That's what I've been looking at.
Okay, so is the concern then that this committee should be a broader group than it is?
I would think that this committee should actually have EA members as well as other staff throughout the university. If we're going to be looking at how can we represent the university with a different EA structure, why not include people that we don't get to communicate with effectively now as part of this committee? Committee, like former chairs, former EA members, former committee members, retirees.
I can definitely see that in there. I guess I'm sort of seeing two processes here, though. There's the initial process of doing the legwork of identifying what's being done and what isn't being done.
Mm-hmm.
So the inconsistencies between the charter and the practice of the assembly, which is probably something that you want to limit to a smaller group that can meet more frequently.
Which seems like this is saying
that. Right.
Right.
And
this is different. This is different than the other initiative. And I just want to see if this is the same initiative in your eyes, I don't, or if it's, you see it as being different.
He's probably about to tell you.
Thanks, guys. I think this is the same initiative, but this one also gives a vague charge to the committee about formulating recommendations about other things to do. And it sounds to me like what you were envisioning, and I wasn't at the winter retreat where this was discussed, but it sounds like what you're envisioning for that is a broader process in developing recommendations.
It's somebody has to come up with some possible working models that could serve our population better than what we have now.
I think that Hazel's vision for this group, and Hazel being the person who wanted to move forward with this principally and lead it, her vision was coming up with recommendations about that.
But that's not what this group is charged with. That's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Well, in that case, this is a new charter proposing a group put forward like that, and
we don't have quorum today anyway, so maybe we can table this discussion, this resolution discussion.
Okay.
But it might be good, you know, now that we've gotten to the point where we're understanding.
Well, so we can't vote on this regardless, so.
Yeah, but it might be good just to just it out a little bit more, like, so that.
I don't really feel comfortable in this discussion about a larger EA body to contribute their opinions.
Well, what I was going to say was I helped Hazel write this resolution, so I'd be happy to work on it to make it better reflect what was intended and where you wanted to go with this group for the next meeting.
Well, I need the process. Maybe Peggy has. If somebody, I'll sit here all day long and talk about this already. I mean, I can.
Okay, I
just can listen to this minute. Because you're confused. You guys did a lot of work. And come back, and I'm not trying to say you didn't do a great job. I think this is needed. I just think that we, you know, maybe it was just me.
And I guess I'm not understanding what you mean by process.
Peggy said the first step in looking at changing our EA model, or even exploring the opportunity, or collecting knowledge would be to define the process of what has to happen. Because down the road in the future, we may find out this is too much of a task to even think about doing. And she was pretty adamant about it, and I said, okay, that's fine. Let's do that. Let's try to define the process of what has to happen. Do we have volunteers that want to do this? And immediately we have three of them. Then we ask for a contact. The contact was Hazel. We've been sitting back now for 2 months waiting for this process to happen, and we get this resolution saying we're charged with looking at the charter and making recommendations.
Well, this is the first step.
My concern, though, is that Peggy was at that meeting where this was done. Mm-hmm. So somewhere there's been some sort of miscommunication.
Right.
So perhaps what I would recommend is that maybe you and Peggy need to have a conversation before we proceed.
Right. Yes, Tom.
I have a couple of things to say, which is one that I think that the group should start thinking about following Robert's Rules of Order or other processes that are well established for group communication. And the other is, I think I've heard twice now, that the structure of the assembly, the representation model, is contained within the charter. The representation model is contained within
that's
the
correct,
charter.
Correct.
Right. So what they did is the first step in the process. The second step in the process is deciding what the model is going to be. You have to change the charter in order
Kelly,
to...
Kelly, they were charged with something that they misinterpreted, or it was my misinterpretation of what I charged them.
All right. Well, this is the first step in the process, right?
They weren't charged with doing the process. They were charged with explaining what the process would be. Maybe you come back and say, the first thing we do is look at the charter and review it and make recommendations to get it up to date. There we go. That's defining the process. Not moving forward on it. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I guess my understanding from Peggy at this point is she's satisfied that the process starts with getting a group together, whether it's an ad hoc committee or some other group, to formulate recommendations. Then the next part of that process would be the employee assembly approving it, and depending on the section, possibly a referendum of employees. That's the whole process.
Okay, that's...
Is that...
I've been waiting to hear
I'm
that.
Sorry.
I have.
No, that's okay. That's fine.
So I think bottom line is we table this resolution at this point until there is a very clear understanding and we have everyone here to discuss it completely before we move ahead on anything. I think that we now understand what Brian was looking for when he gave the request for volunteers and not an official charge for an ad hoc committee. So now that this is kind of explained, I think what we need to do is maybe you need to talk to Peggy and get that thing worked out. We put all this on hold until our next meeting, and then we put it as an agenda item to discuss how we want to move forward from here. So otherwise, we can talk about this from now until the outcome home.
All right.
Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. I got to go.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.